And welcome back, spooky friends, to That Spooky Life. I am your host, Miranda, and if this is your first time joining us, I'm super glad that you're here. It's our weekly slide to the in-between of the spookier and paranormal side of life, sometimes with some explanations, sometimes with some theories, and sometimes with a giant shrug and a healthy dose of sage. But today I am bringing you a wonderful listener story, and a fairly interesting, I think, informational witchy tip, and my personal spooky story for the day we are going to dive right into with a set of strange sort of premonitions that a friend and I have shared over the years. Less haunting, but definitely spooky at times. And the fact that we live now in the digital age and have some digital proof of these things, it can be even spookier to think back on. For longtime friends of the show, I'm sure you've heard me talk about my friend Danielle before. She is one of my oldest friends, and one of the early few friends who I felt comfortable talking about paranormal, witchy, sort of more magic with a K side of things too. As growing up in a small southern town, those friends tended to be few and far between until I was much older. And we've known each other for, well, our friendship is old enough to drink, we'll put it at that. She and I have experienced what we both called a demon together, in addition to a little boy that currently takes residence at her house. For anybody who is interested in that, there is an episode called The Little Boy, and it is the tale of that spirit that lives at Danielle's house. We have not yet had an update. We have actually been looking for information on him, but we haven't really found anything that fits the description yet. There were a few local legends that were kind of possibles, but nothing that really lines up with what we know. So, if I get that information and we find anything on him, other than she and I, you guys will probably be the first to know. Shortly after Danielle was married, I had gone up for the wedding. I was in the wedding. My husband and I both went up. And I had this dream that she was pregnant, and she was super excited about it. And we were talking about baby things. And not long after this dream, she came to visit with her husband. It was the first time a lot of our friends down here had met the husband because they lived out of state. And it was a nice little trip. Well, I tell her all about this dream, and she was like, yeah, no, none of that. Like, we've talked about it, maybe, I don't know, whatever. But, you know, that's a funny dream. It was very, very vivid, and I gave her a lot of strange detail. Like, it was super normal in the dream, and then I woke up and realized how abnormal the entire situation was. And lo and behold, after they went home, about 2 weeks later, she called me super freaked out. And it was because she'd found out that she was pregnant. And it was not one of those like, oh, I'm going to have to wait a few weeks to take a test. It was she was late on her cycle, but had had no previous clue that she could even be pregnant. And I had a dream before I actually saw her in person. So at the time, the digital age was still not quite what it is today. And we chatted on and off, but we would go great bouts of time, both with her job and she was in school, and I was working full time and doing a lot of traveling at that juncture in my life. So there would be a period of time where, like, we would talk 3 or 4 times in a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then we'd go 3 or 4 months without being able to catch up with one another just because schedule wise. And so we chatted, but after a few months, not realizing how long it had been, I got just a knock upside the head from the universe. Like, it stopped me in what I was doing. And I was just like, it's been a while since I've talked to Danielle. I have this compulsion to talk to Danielle. I hope nothing's wrong. So I pulled out my phone and I gave her a call. And I'd been planning on leaving her a voice message because I knew that she was probably going to be either at work or at school. And to my surprise, she answered. And she answered and was like, hey, give me just a second. And ordered something to eat. And apparently she was at Burger King and she wanted onion rings because she was very, 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 very pregnant at that point. And she finished her order and we got to talking and she told me about her day. She was stressed. She was tired. She was in pain. She was uncomfortable. She wasn't sleeping well. And I was trying to talk her through it and, you know, asking her how that was because, you know, I didn't have any kids. I don't even know if I was married at that point. That was right around the time. I think I was, but I think it was either just new or maybe not. I'd have to think about the year, and that's some math that I think it's a little too late at night for me to be doing right now, even though this is in the morning for you all. And the line in the drive-thru was taking an unreasonable amount of time. Somebody like two or three cars ahead of her had gotten a very large order, not just for like a large family, but it seemed that they were feeding an office. And a bag went into the car and then back out of the car like they'd gotten something wrong. And there were six or seven sweet teas. And all Danielle wanted was her sweet tea and some onion rings. And that finally got resolved. And then there were still a couple of cars ahead of them. And those also took forever. And by the time she was the next person in line, she was basically yelling into the phone. Technically, but also at the car in front of her, all I want is my goddamn onion rings and to go the fuck home. After she says that, as I'm giggling, the phone gets really, 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 really quiet. And for a second, I thought maybe the phone call had dropped because that was not uncommon. I was like, hello? And very quietly, in a voice I have only very rarely in my lifetime heard my friend use, she said to me, Miranda, do you have my husband's number? Which I did. I was and still am friends with him. I said, yes, why? What's wrong? She said, I need you to call him and tell him to go ahead and get the overnight bag ready. Because the discomfort I have been feeling is apparently actually contractions, as my water just broke. And we're going to need to clean me up and go to the hospital. Well, my heart shot into my throat. I went into full panic mode and I was like, okay, 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 okay. I'll call you back. I'll call him and then I'll call you back. And it was that full, like, best friend on the phone trying to handle things because she was about to get her onion rings and drive. And she's like, no, it's okay. I'm this far from home and I'm going to eat these fucking onion rings. And so I hung up with her and I called her husband and he was like, why are you calling me and not her? I was like, well, I was on the phone with her literally when it happened and she has to drive because she's coming home. So instead of talking on the phone while she was actively driving, she asked that I call. He was like, fair enough. I'll get things ready. I was like, okay. So I called her back. She was fine. She was eating her onion rings, if in pain, and said that she'd be good and was going to get home. And next thing I know, I am getting a text message from her husband saying that their son had been born. Now, the fun thing about this was that in my dream, I had dreamt that it was a boy. And I don't remember how much we talked about that, she and I, for a while. But it was a boy in the dream, and I remember that. After this, one day I called her, a little stressed, because I was late on my cycle, and my husband and I were not in any place that we could afford or prepare to have a little one. And seeing as we seemed to have this odd connection, at least from my brain to her uterus, she made the joke about seeing if she had a connection from her brain to my uterus and commanded my body to begin the cycle. We laughed about it, had a good time. She talked me down from the stress. I felt a lot better afterwards, which physically can have an effect. And not 2 hours later, I started. And thus the joke of us having the bat phone to one another's reproductive systems began. Now, realistically, in that particular scenario, stress can have an effect on the body to where it can delay or make something come early. Like, it can mess with your cycle to have a lot of stress. And I had a lot of anxiety at that time. So the cortisol levels in my body just capped out real often. And it's not surprising that I would have been late due to stress. And then she calmed me down enough that my body was like, oh, okay, well, let's do this then. That was just the beginning, though. After that, it was a few years, but I had another dream that I was at her house playing with her son, who I knew and had met and loved dearly and adopted as my own, and her daughter, and my daughter. Now, this was 13 years ago, and the only child that either of us had was her son. Now, being that I predicted the pregnancy, and she found out that she was pregnant after she saw me, and then I was the one who she was on the phone with when the labor went in, there's been a long-standing joke that her eldest is also just my child. Like, her husband may have donated the DNA, but technically it's just the child of me and Danielle. Personality-wise, now that he's a little bit older, it's also hilariously and distressingly accurate. But I had a dream that I was at her house playing with her son and daughter and my daughter when neither of us had a daughter. I didn't even have any children. This was 13 years ago. I called and I told her about this dream, and it was so vivid. She and I were sitting next to each other. My little one was sitting on her lap. Her daughter was playing with my little one. And then her son was about playing and doing chores and things like that, and was older in the dream than he was in real life. I explained in great detail. At this time, I had never been to the house in which she currently lives with the infamous little boy spirit. When I tell you that the first time I came to this house, years and years later, I had a very stop dead in my tracks moment, because that house was the house that I had seen in the dream. And it was very unnerving in its accuracy. So once I tell her the story of this dream that I had, we both had a moment of silence. And a great, but, you know, a good laugh over it. And she was like, well, I'll start paying attention then. I kid you not, I don't remember if it was 1 month or two, but a not significant amount of time later, she called me and told me that she was pregnant again. And I don't remember where I was, but I remember the cold feeling on my face of, wait, what? Just the blood draining from my face in that moment of validation and not sure if this is a good or a bad thing. And just, I didn't know what to do with myself about it. However, in that phone call, we both placed solid bets that it was going to be a girl. It was not late enough in the pregnancy to be able to tell those things yet, but sure enough, a few months later, it was a girl. When I came to visit and I stood in the nursery the first time, while she was pregnant, before her daughter was born, I had this strange moment of clarity and, like, honest validation. It was one of the first, like, comfortably validating things that I'd experienced, because something in my subconscious, something in my mind, my higher self, whatever it was that was telegraphing these things, just had a nod, like a closed lip nod of, yes, this is correct. And she and I just shrugged and laughed over it and went about our lives. And her son and daughter grew up and are wonderful, and they are both my children. Sorry to the ex-husband, if you ever hear this. They're not your children, they're mine. And that was that for a really long time. Fast forward about 9 years, however, and I found out that I was pregnant. And from the estimation, it was about 2 weeks after I'd started trying. So it happened really, really quickly. Basically, my husband and I were like, yeah, we think we're ready for this. We should start trying now just in case it takes a while. Boom, 2 weeks later, pregnant. The funny thing about that is Danielle was one of the first people that I told that we were planning to do this. And she and I joked that it was going to happen like the next day, basically. And we're like, oh, you're planning because, you know, you want to start just in case it takes a little while. Guess what? Pregnant tomorrow. Sure enough, it happened with a quickness. And of course, we just said that she phoned it in. From day one, the minute she found out I was pregnant, she said that it was going to be a girl. And while I was uncertain for a little while, it didn't take long for me to believe it would be a girl. And I'd been like, no, I kind of feel it. Like, my intuition tells me that it's a little girl. And this was before Danielle reminded me about the dream almost a decade prior. I was like, I know why I'm sure, because I know how I feel, but how are you so sure? She's like, do you not remember your dream of our two daughters before they were born? And she explained that's how she knew. And I was like, oh my God, I had completely forgotten about that dream. Now, I do realize I missed a part of this story. I had the dream of our daughters. She found out that she was pregnant and it was a girl. And then life was hectic for us both. But while she was pregnant, after I came up to visit and saw the nursery, I called her just out of the blue one day because I had this compulsion to call her again. And this time her husband answered the phone. And he answered the phone and said, how the hell do you do that? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? He explained that he could not give Danielle the phone because she was actively, currently being checked into the hospital because she was in labor. Like, I'd done it again. I'd just had this compulsion to call, and she was in labor. So I had a dream about them before they got here, and then I had a compulsion to call on both times that she went into labor with her kids. And then I'm pregnant. She reminds me that the dream happened, and she was like, you've yet to be wrong. And she like felt it in her bones. She was like, you're going to have a girl. Additionally, as time got closer to my delivery day, she had an inspiration. She was just like, I know exactly when it's going to happen. And not only did she predict it, but she didn't tell me. She told me she predicted it, but she did not tell me what date. Instead, she wrote it down on a post-it note and attached it at the bottom of her computer monitor where the date and time could be seen. And when I tell you, this was months before the child was actually born, she nailed the exact date. I'm going to have to see if I can find that picture and put it on social media. When I called her the day that I went into labor, to tell her that, well, I was actually asking her a lot of questions because I'd never been through it before. I was like, is this something worth calling the doctor over? She told me to eat something and have some water because they weren't going to let me if I had to go to the hospital. Call the midwife, like 3 a.m. This is my homie on the phone talking me through what ended up being the first steps of labor. And because of her prediction that she didn't tell me about, there was a lot of wincing and like moments that she gave me that I didn't understand, because I called her at 3 a.m. the day before she predicted. And she was like, I have a feeling this is going to be a really long day for you, and you should probably try and get some sleep. 36 hours later, I had not slept. 26 hours of labor, an hour into the date that she had called on a post-it note. She was right. She knew. She was like, oh, it's going to be a long damn day. Because something about it, she just knew when the little one was going to get here. And it was just kind of like, I feel like my kiddo was just like, nope, I have to prove Aunt Danielle right. What? Really? They conspired against me. So apparently, if she had the bat phone to my reproductive system, that meant for like 10 months she had the bat phone to my child, and she's been whispering into her ear the whole time. We have yet to be able to sit down and figure out past life stuff. We've never really had to have that conversation. There was a check-in, actually recently, after our friendship is well old enough to drink. We both just sort of like understood slash accepted the truth that, oh yeah, we've known each other before. We both believe in reincarnation. We clicked immediately and we're still friends and haven't pissed each other off at any juncture in our lives. Not really. We've had this connection before. We have only been reacquainting this go. We got to know each other a long time ago in a lifetime far, far away. Is that from whence the bat phone to our uteruses came from? I have no idea. But if we ever figure it out, I will let you guys know. And that is my spooky story for the week. Our listener story for the week comes from beloved listener and friend of the show, Becky, who has shared the tale of her ancestors and her Bigma before. And this is a story called The White Lady of the Peak. Becky writes, I rarely see things with the naked eye. That's not how my gifts work, but when I do, I remember them because it is a rare occurrence. The land we live on is verified native land. It has been in, quote, the family, so to speak, for generations. In 1998, my ex-husband and I, along with my mom and daddy, decided to build two separate homes on this land to get away from the things in this world that were not safe. My ex-father-in-law had told us of the white lady that protected this land and the occupants providing it was respected. He was a Native American shaman, as well as a professor of ethnobotany. His family lineage was that of German settlers and the local tribe here in our area. As an aside, she included a note that I find very interesting and I want to share. The Sissipaha tribe of the Saxipaha River, the tribe most likely banded with another tribe where they were, as no recorded history of the tribe exists after 1715-1724-ish. It is thought they may have banded with the Catawba tribe. He had always told us stories of his cousin who had desecrated a burial mound to plant a peach orchard that was on his part of the family property, and the bad luck that befell him. I just figured Papa had partaken a bit too much peyote. For me, this was a little weird, as I'd not yet come to fully terms with what I was or what I could see, so I always let Papa tell me his stories with a pinch of skepticism. In order to build, Papa insisted on making sure the white lady was welcoming. So, he, as well as two other noted shamans in our state, held a three-night vigil in trance to speak with the white lady and ask her blessings on our build. After the third night, they came from the land and all agreed that the white lady would welcome and protect us, provided we followed her boundaries. She set those boundaries of where she would protect and where we were granted to build, and whatever happened, Papa was satisfied, and the building began. We did live in peace, and yes, we did divorce while on this land. It was not because there was no love, and it was not because of violence. We just simply were not meant to be. My boys grew up safely here, with us never having any sense of anything but security, and Papa from time to time would talk about the White Lady and her watching over us. It was honestly an enchanting time. When the separation was finalized, however, I left the land and made my way into the city, and when I did, the peace and secure feeling was gone. Flash forward to January 2016, and I once again returned to the land to live. My daddy passed on to whatever lies beyond, and my mother could not care for herself. So my new and better spouse and I, along with the boys, moved back. It was odd. I was grieving for my daddy so badly, and yet the sense of peace kept washing over me like gentle, warm waves. In that grief, and the span of time that had passed since leaving and coming back, I had momentarily forgotten about the White Lady. One freezing cold night, about 3 days after we buried my dad, I was out walking my mom's little dog, not particularly paying attention to anything other than Midge the dachshund and her needs. I saw a bright flash of white light, and then I saw her standing just on the dirt road on the most beautiful, blinding white horse. She was Native, white feathers and dark hair, flowing, not braided, her full white length fringed dress with a white cape and what looked to be an animal fur collar so bright white it looked like an LED flashlight. She held a staff in one hand, feathers moving as if a breeze was crossing over them. We made eye contact, and as quick as we made eye contact, she was gone. I brought the dog in and said nothing, as my mom was not capable of focusing on the experience in her own grief, and my asinine brother and his equally asinine wife were also here at the time. So I said my goodnight and went to bed. My spouse was already asleep, so I just cuddled in and tried to rest. That night, I dreamed of her. Oddly, the White Lady was at the crossroads, not my Bigma. Her presence was commanding. She stood tall, and she looked so dignified and royal, for lack of a better explanation. The vibes you feel are peace and strength and respect in that. If you mess up, she could make shit happen. With a voice clear and with little discussion, she once again set forth the original boundaries and terms, followed with a short, softer-feeling tidbit. Family of Blue Feather is always welcome, as you have come to protect the land and your world. As promised, you will live in peace from the doings of the outside, as long as the boundaries are followed. I have spoken with your guardians, and you and your kin will be protected here, on our land. With a much softer smile as her face seemed to shed the commanding presence. Welcome home, child of the Fae. You are always one of ours. Oh, I just got chills up the back of my arms. Holy balls. That is so awesome. I have full body goosebumps right now. Like, all of the hair on my body is standing up. Even, like, my long hair is trying to stand up on my head. Oh my goodness, that is amazing. And awesome. And she seems charming. Like, and awesome and a badass. Whew. Oh man. I hope there are comments on this episode at some juncture or on Instagram, because y'all, this is a good one. Becky, thank you so much for sharing that story. That is an amazing story, and I adore it. I am so honored to be able to have read that. I am also super chill bumped out right now, and I don't see that going away anytime soon. So that is our listener story for the week. So my witchy tip for the day is less of a tip and more of an informational. I had a question come into one of the small groups that I work with recently about what is considered baneful, baleful, or black magic. And that's an interesting question, and I'm sure there are a lot of definitions out there. But I know we have a lot of folks who listen who are not necessarily as familiar with some of the more traditional aspects of witchcraft and spellcraft and things like that. So I thought it was worth at least a 101 introductory explanation as to how most folks in general define baneful, baleful, or black magic. And the simplest explanation is baneful magic is any spell, ritual, or technique that is designed to cause harm, be it mental, emotional, physical, otherwise, to another individual. That can be curses, that can be hexes, jinxes, poppets, anything that is going to hurt someone else, particularly maliciously, is typically considered to be baneful magic. Now, there are a lot of different paths of witchcraft. There are a lot of different beliefs in a lot of different practices. And some of these things have very wide cast nets and a lot of gray areas. So what may be defined as baneful in one practice may actually be acceptable in another under a particular set of circumstances, or may actually be acceptable or required. Like, say if someone harms a child, you know, there may be a particular path that a witch or a pagan may walk that requires them to do something about it because that child cannot protect themselves. Therefore, it is the witch's path to protect that child, protect the powerless, etc. And that may require doing some what some people would qualify as baneful magic in particular situations. Now, there are some who do so for the betterment and the justice of the powerless and in the hopes of making the world a better place. And of course, as in everything, there are people who use such things for selfish gains and selfish means and do so with knee-jerk reactions. And I know it's something that Astrid has touched on in the few times that she's joined us on the show, but it's worth noting that what was popularized in modern society to be known as a more Wiccan ideal of the law of three, which is anything you do and put out into the world comes back to you threefold. A lot of different religions and beliefs and practices across the world have very similar beliefs, and some don't. Some believe that if you come from a place of truth and justice, it doesn't matter what you do. Some don't care. And that is a far, far too detailed conversation to try and get into, and I am not nearly well read enough on the diversity in the myriad of colorful, old, new, and anything in between paths that are extant in the world at this time to try and pontificate on such things. However, as a general rule, anything that harms another person in any way is considered to be baneful or baleful, and by some, black magic. If you run across things that you are not sure of, or things that make you go, I don't know, it's probably a good idea to avoid it. Who knows? Maybe one day you will be that witch saving children and things like that. But until you know what it is, until you have an understanding of what exactly it will take and what could possibly be coming back to you, you need to probably not. And just avoid those little things. Little curses or hexes or maledictions and things like that. And always remember free will. I am of a mind that love spells are, well, I think they're personally baleful, but that's my personal opinion. I'm not sure if they actually count. But bending the will of another or controlling the will of another or changing the will of another is a very risky game, and remember how important consent is. If it's not something you would want done to you, don't do it to someone else. And as odd as it might sound that the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done unto you, it's honestly a good rule to live by regardless of where it was popularized and best known from. So if you are new to these things, and there is something that makes you go, I don't know if that's a good thing, research it. Look into it. And remember that if you dabble, things notice you. And if you put something out there, there is a chance that it will be coming back to you magnified threefold. And if you are someone who is listening and chuckling because you know what you're doing and you know what you're talking about, and you are of a path that is like, it's all right, we've got this, then you keep on keeping on. I am not one to judge. I just had the question come up and realized that it was not something that we'd particularly touched on the podcast. And I have a lot of people who I've spoken to or spoken to vicariously through others who have an interest and are new to this. If you're not sure, don't do anything with it. Research it. Ask somebody. Heck, hit me up on Instagram. If I don't know, I can find you somebody who does. Black magic is not always evil. White magic is not always good. Because if the person casting the spell work has a baleful intent, then regardless of whether or not the spell and the idea itself is considered white magic, intent is what matters. But as a general overview, causing harm to someone else is what qualifies. So if you are finding something that, oh, this will, you know, trip them up or so on and so forth, make their day bad, that's still technically baneful, baleful magic, because that is an emotional and or mental damage to them. Good idea to steer clear. If you are not practiced or familiar with traditions of a path or have a teacher, etc. And there are things that you can do to protect yourself against such things. And really the most basic, easy way of doing that is don't be an asshole. Be a good person. Work for the things that are right. Help others when you can. Practice self-care without being vain or narcissistic. And just be a good person. And the stickier, nastier things will have a much harder time being sticky on you or nasty to you. These are all very high-level, very generic advice, information, and sort of good practice tips, as it were. But I felt that here during the retrograde of the century, apparently, with five planets in retrograde, having just gotten out from under a sixth for a few days, and the strange drama train that personal lives have been just speeding ahead with, the heightened tempers of the world, and just the general climate, it was topical. I've seen conversations pop up here, there, and everywhere. And I wanted to touch base with you guys and sort of give you an overview. But that is our witchy tip for the week, which is more just like a witchy 101, I suppose. And if you have a witchy tip or a question that you would like to submit for me to answer or give advice on in our witchy tips for the week, or if you have a paranormal listener story that you would like to submit to have me read, or if you're even interested in maybe coming on and telling a story yourself, please send me an email to thatspookylifepodcast@gmail.com and go ahead and include in the subject line either spooky story or witchy tip. That way I will know which one you are submitting, which is super cool. And I cannot wait to read them because I know that I say this a lot, but I really do love reading you guys' stories. I started this podcast as a personal journey and getting my voice and my experiences and my stories out there, and then discovered a pure sort of masochistic at times just joy in reading the heartwarming, terrifying, goosebump rendering things that you guys send to me. And I adore it, and I adore you all. I hope that you're doing well this week, and feel free to follow me on social media. You know, ask some questions, leave some comments. Let me know how you're doing. And until we have the pleasure of sharing one another's company again next week, do not forget to keep living that spooky life, my friends. Bye.